bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the big show. Happy New Year. We're back. Yes, we've had a nice long break, nearly a month. We all feel refreshed and rejuvenated and replenished. Steve's still drunk, but never mind. but we're here for the big show. It's the first one of the new season. There we go. We've got a whole season ahead of us. Joining me, incredible panel. New boy as well. And he's Australian. We can take the piss out of him. especially after the summer when we beat them at cricket. But starting us off, top left, James Hart, how you doing?
Good day, sport.
Good day, sport.
yes. You well, Ewan?
I'm grand,
happy,
man.
Is it too late to say Happy New Year? I don't know whether by the time
we kind of all did the Happy New Year's privately, didn't we, I suppose? So,
but, January already. We're almost halfway through January. Yeah. Oh, man. 2013.
It's been a good break,
though. Go as quickly as 2012.
Did that go quick for you, then?
Take longer to say. Oh, yeah.
Really? Mm. Are you still writing 2012 in checkbooks?
I don't write checks anymore.
What's a checkbook? I've got to pay by check tomorrow.
Funnily enough, if you've got a child that goes to school, check is about the only thing that...
Yes, that's true.
Saving having to bring pounds and pence into school with them is the only way to go, really.
School trips and after-school clubs.
Although, my son has actually, they use a thumbprint on their school for school dinners. It's crazy, really. I mean, you know,
you're saying your son's already got a criminal record? Is that the kind of school he goes to?
You kind of worry when they come out of sixth form, all the thumbprints get shipped off to the police just in case.
That's right.
It's a plan.
It's already.
And then they get sent to Australia.
Ah, there we go. He's digging himself already. Next to him.
That's genius. I think if every child had to do their thumbprint for school, we wouldn't have criminals.
You still have criminals, but they'd get caught a lot quicker.
You haven't read 1984, have you?
I'm fully aware with...
if we tagged every teenager...
Yes, we'd know where the bloggers were.
At six.
Steve Naber, chairman of the London Mac User Group. How you doing, pal?
I'm great, sir. How are you?
Oh, excellent. All right, no worries. Recovered?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm very excited tonight.
From your blustery trip down to the coast?
Oh, yes. We went to Devon for New Year, which was good fun.
You've got the only picture with no one in it over at 45 degrees that looks blustery. that tweet out, I was just like, that's got holy hell wind written all over it.
Yeah, I now know why it's cheap to hire a house with friends on the coast in the New Year, because nobody else wants to go there because everything's closed. You walk down the high street in Willacombe Bay and every shop says back open in March. Even the curry house, and they never close, and the corner shop.
Oh, no.
That was nuts.
What did you do then?
Drank.
Good man. What else?
Good man.
Played games, yeah, actually, it was good.
Talking of drinking, Sarah Gray, how you doing, girl?
Oh, so am I having the one that's got the reputation for drinking this year?
Well,
you inherited it from up there.
No one else drinks on screen apart from you.
Okay. Well, I'm obviously somewhat...
Have you not been in Ireland over Christmas?
No, I haven't. I'm going on Saturday.
Right, okay.
So, but yes, something else I've obviously inherited is good evening listener, Mr. Hart.
Good evening listener.
You didn't say it.
Oh, I do apologise. I called them sport.
Is that your catchphrase? Have you got a 70s catchphrase, James, that you're going to get arrested for inappropriate sexual conduct later on or something? No. Did you see Dara O'Brien's crack on the first stargazing the other night?
No.
They were doing a thing on K9 where K9 asks a question, and at the end of the spot he said, K9, the only 70s star you can book with any certainty at the moment. Which is very good, and he did say at the end, too soon. I'm not going to take it. Dale, new boy, how you doing, mate?
Evening. How are we all?
Yeah, there'll be an initiation later, which will involve drinking and a cricket bat and a sore ass.
I was going to say, should I bring the lube? That's obviously the answer to that question.
tell everyone about yourself, mate.
So, as I guess everyone's worked out, I'm an Aussie, but I actually live in the UK, have done for almost 6 years. IT background, worked for companies like Intel, Seagate, Vodafone, Sophos, and currently in the payments industry. So I've relieved myself of the IT burden and moved over to finance.
But, what's that, debt collecting?
Yeah, exactly. Money.
The rest of the panel are sitting there going, holy hell, this boy's vastly overqualified for this show.
Well, I don't know. But then had military background before that. So I've been around the block a few times, as you can probably tell by the wrinkled look on the face.
So we won't take the piss too much because he knows how to use a gun.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Don't worry about that too much. I actually fixed radios for a living. So.
Oh, right. Okay. That's good. And finally, Dr. H, how you doing, mate?
Very well. How are you doing?
He's waiting for a pun, and I'm not going to do one. It's fine.
And do you know what? This week I actually have some interesting deals.
Oh, go on then.
So there you go.
You haven't got any. You can't breach confidentiality, surely? Absolutely not.
Right, no. Well, as long as you remove the names, we're all right, surely.
Yeah, just keep the conditions the same.
I'll say the names and just make up the details. That's all right.
Wait around.
The Week in Tech. It's CES. Lots has happened, and I'm expecting everyone to fill me in on Qualcomm in a minute, and I'm taking that's not the people that make the mowers. We've had a letter from Paul Ashbrook. He's rather upset at us. Hello, Ewan. Not too much BlackBerry bashing tonight, please, I hope. You're depressing me with your talk of BB10 being a fail. And I didn't say it was. I just said I hope it wasn't. I dread to think of my next phone being a non-BlackBerry after using my BB9000 with, and that sounds like a gun actually, with NFC compatibility for the past couple of years. Yeah, but you couldn't use it with anything, could you? Oh yes, I have a playbook in daily use as well. From experience, Android is riddled with adware, bloatware and malware. Apple phones are just too fragile and Windows Phone 8, well, don't even go there.
What's
so
his
please,
name?
His name is Paul Ashbrook. So please give BB10 a chance. Give BBN a chance. That's a song, isn't it? And have a good show.
Charity record, mate.
Regards.
Paul, one question Paul. For you.
Oh dear.
I go. To
you know it's a rhetorical question because he can't answer.
On my BlackBerry, and it has two addresses. If I go to my address book in the BlackBerry, it only shows me one address for Clive. But when I go to send an email, it always sends it to the wrong address to Clive. How do I change that?
Okay, so we'll be looking for an answer next week, please, Paul. If you get to write in with one.
Book. There's only one address in Clive, but when you go to send an email to it, it automatically sends it to the other address for Clive.
Don't send an email to Clive.
Have you got another client set up somewhere?
I thought
I changed
was
the
iPhone.
Name to protect the innocent, and I work with Clive, so unfortunately I need to send an email.
Definitely sounds like a bug.
Well, I think what you need to do, Steve, is give us all Clive's email addresses and we'll all try.
We'll work out which one is the wrong one.
Yeah.
I'll tell you which one his personal one is, which is the one that keeps
Don't do that. So thieves broke into Mountain View this week. They broke into the Microsoft premises and they ransacked the place and only stole the iPads. They left all of the stuff that ran Windows, unfortunately. USB is going to get super fast. It's allegedly going to get even quicker than it already is at 3 megabits per second. And there's one particularly worrying piece of news. If you use Lewis Station down south,
because
they're getting rid of the runaway cafe and they're replacing it with a chain. And Southern Rail has come in. They get a bashing every week anyway because their service is supposed to be poor. But they're getting a right old kicking at the moment because they've taken a privately owned cafe and turned it into a chain. They've given it away to someone else who's part of D something foods or other.
What made it worse was the fact they actually claimed at first that the
it was independent.
It was independent, and yes, they got it wrong. They got completely found out there.
Allegedly so. I'm only saying this because Barry Collins lives in Lewis, and it's close to his heart. He hasn't been on the show for a while, but I did promise to throw the weight of the BTN listenership behind his campaign. So there you go. Write to Southern Rail if you want to keep the CAF.
Be as rude as you like.
No, don't be as rude as you like. Just state.
Tell them Ewan sent you.
State your opinion, please. That's it. But please support the runaway calf. There you go. You heard it here first. I think they're probably safe now. Actually, that we mentioned
it's the old story. They had a more competitive offer, which is just poor, really, isn't it?
Well, they talked about the development and stuff like that of the. So, but anyway, that wasn't meant to be a story that we were going to discuss. Sorry.
Are you putting all these headlines in about coffee shops closing and about people ringing in about BlackBerrys because there's nothing happened at CES?
I see.
Are you trying to cover
that up?
Well, did you see the? Did you see the? There was a. What was it? There was the PC Pro have done like a. What is your vote for your top 10? The best things at CES this week. And I read down the list and I tweeted back to Barry Collins and said, is that the best there's been? Because holy hell. I mean, traditionally CES is the no price, no date show, isn't it? But I mean, I think it's been awful this year.
There's not been many surprises, has there?
No.
What they've done is, and I know this has been in all the news and stuff already, but the good thing they've done is they've killed 3D television. 3D television is passé. Everybody get yourself
they haven't killed
the biggest 4K television in the world, and it will only cost you £22,000.
A bargain.
That's because
did you see the bigger one than that? It was a Westinghouse 140-inch one or something that will cost you $300,000. Individually ordered. It's 110 or 150 inch. Don't they make $300,000?
They make fridges, don't they, Westinghouse?
Indeed.
That's why it's so big, so you can get the beer in it.
Has anyone seen a 4K TV?
Yes. Ooh, I saw the Olympics because the Olympics opening ceremony was recorded in 4K, and it was the fact you get one of these really long shots of the whole of the stadium. And you could pick out individual faces you could see faces in the crowd at the far side of the stadium. That is
you could see
amazing.
The female shot putter's chest hair.
Oh, come on.
No, go on, Steve. You've seen a 4K at Harrods, haven't you?
Yeah, anyone in London, if you've got an hour to kill, go to Harrods and go to the fifth floor or fourth floor. They've got it doesn't matter what size it is, they've got a 4K screen on display there. It is stunning. Really stunning. I mean, when you see HD and standard def, you can see a difference. But the 4K, I spotted it from across the room, and even my mum was impressed. It is incredible.
It's passed the mum test.
I have to say that it's only before time. We're being told by Alex Fox in the chat room to keep off the media show's territory. But that's what goes on the telly, not the telly themselves. We're strictly technology. But how long is it going to be, Ewan, before we hear about the 4K television cartels? Because we've had CRT and now TFT just in the last week, and so they'll be fixing the prices of the 4K televisions.
I mean,
just you wait.
The all of the display stuff has been prone to cartelism all along, but I've got to say, since sort of the last 4 years, I don't feel like there's prices being fixed. I think there's such a broad spectrum of price on televisions now. That you do feel like it really is truly a competitive market. But, I mean, Steve, the one that you said that you saw was something like £30,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, but if you listen, if you read history, it's or read history back in the day.
Yes, Henry VIII had a 4K television that was £130,000.
Yeah, the HD TVs came out and they were two grand, £3,000, and before you knew it, they were selling in Tesco at £299. So it's something I've got excited about in terms of the next generation of television, and I think it would be very much worth it because it is that much better than the jump between SD and HD. The jump from HD to 4K is 10 times.
But is that here's a serious question though? Is that not because of the screen size though? I mean, this is going to be stupid, isn't it? I suppose to say, but let's say you had a 4K TV that was 42 inch. I mean, would you really see the difference between HD and Super XD, whatever it is at 4K, at 42 inches, because I wouldn't have thought you're going to see pixel density
to that
kind of degree,
doesn't it?
Well, exactly. Mm. That's my point. You know, at that kind of size and the average living room, I wouldn't suggest you'll see a great deal of difference. Whereas you don't see that much difference between SD and HD on 32 inch.
Well, my concern, to be honest, is that we only bought our Blu-ray player. Yes, it was sort of £39. We only bought it last year. We've just gone to Blu-ray, which is something that will play HD media that we, and obviously you can plug all kinds of smart telly gear into it. You will have to replace all the kit. You'd have to subscribe to a service that broadcasts in 4K. I know that I think FreeSat, I think the BBC are sort of spearheading it, as they often do. But it's a kind of like, it's a whole platform change that you've got to sort of, and people are only just, we've only just gone digital. People are only just getting Freeview boxes.
Where, Wind Rider in the chat room was asking whether Henry VIII's HD TV was what sank the Mary Rose.
I was going to say, though, I think Alex
has
hit it on the nose, though, is what the problem with 4K is actually the delivery of the content. I mean, the Sony were talking about it over at CES, and they're going to ship hard drives with their first 4K boxes so they can put 4K movies down on the hard drives, and that's about the only way of delivering the content to them. So really going forward, how long is it before that we've either got enough bandwidth or some sort of other capability to actually get the 4K content down onto the screen?
I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, I've made a 1080p video today for some work that I did on Monday night, and the output video from that at 14 minutes is 17 gigabytes at true 1080. That's true 1080, uncompressed 1080. So at that kind of level, if you really want the true 4K experience, you're probably going to be talking a file that's at 30 gigabytes. 38 gigabytes, 40 gigabytes.
I'm not entirely sure storage is cheap enough yet, is it? You can't record, just think of your TiVo, it's going to be full up with three programs.
Well, I think storage is fairly cheap at the moment. If you look at a 3 terabyte drive, it's going to cost you about £100, and that's a raw drive. 120 gets you a 2 terabyte enclosed drive. Now, for that kind of money, though, you're only talking about getting, you know, a dozen films on that, and it's topped out at 2 gig. 2 terabytes, rather. So the storage is cheap, but storage is not cheap in proprietary enclosures.
No. But, guys, if you compare it to when HD came in, we were probably only getting broadband speeds of 2-3 meg down. We're now getting kind of 60, 70, 80, 100.
Yeah.
In terms of size of files, we were used to kind of 1 gig was big.
1 gig was enormous, absolutely.
So it's only just development. Yeah.
There's still not that much of the UK that's on 60, 70 meg.
No.
There's large swathes of the country that are still struggling to get 2 to 3, as far as I understand. It's getting better all the time.
Oh, yes. Pick me. 3 meg here.
Long way from being able to cope with 4K down telephone lines, that's for sure.
But I find that interesting.
This is the whole thing about the...
I find that interesting that we haven't even talked about format as in Blu-ray or some media as in hard format to get this content onto our screens. We've automatically gone to it's going to come down the internet pipe, which is how we're going to get
this. Yes, absolutely.
Which just shows how much our generation are now, because we're mobile, born mobile, we're now thinking about getting it.
We're not looking at a disc, yeah.
Down the pipe, yeah.
Well, I was looking at
hard media like that is dying the death. I just don't see the point of investing in it.
I've got to run 3 network cables down the back of my TV stack.
TiVo
and my Blu-ray player. Now, I mean, 2 of them run on Wi-Fi, but you can't really afford the bandwidth of Wi-Fi. You've got to run network cables all over your house now.
Well, I did some work for a firm a few years ago, and they did cabling, and the guy said, what do we owe you? I'm like, well, no, hang on a second, you do cabling, don't you? Yeah. Any chance you could come and wire the whole house for copper? And every room has got an Ethernet port in it now, and I'd be lost without it, because it doesn't go well enough. Even over 1 gigabit connection, it's not enough.
I have the same thing. We've slowly been... putting in Ethernet cables in the walls as we've been decorating each room in the house. And I agree with you, Ewan. I don't use Wi-Fi. The only thing we use it for is mobile devices like smartphones and tablets, and that's about it.
I've got an AirPort Extreme, and it's the biggest pile of crap. I cannot, you know, there's signal dropouts all over the place. I want to do what Alex has done. I bought 2 9-decibel antennas that are about 1.5 feet long, and I'm going to get something that plugs them to those.
You've got the whole street on your own Wi-Fi.
Yeah, no one else is going to get sod all around. I'm going to blow everyone's windows out. Be done with it.
Take that.
So tell me about the Qualcomm... Because Steve's put a link for the video, and I haven't had 2 minutes to watch it since he posted it.
Brilliant.
But, so I'm taking it, Steve, that you've watched it. Talk us through the Qualcomm keynote.
How on earth do you explain...
How do you explain it without using expletives?
Car smash.
It opens up with three kids of the year, kids of the decade, or kids of the times, talking street and...
like talking young
enough said.
Just,
I have to say, your disdain for youth is really impressive, Steve.
I think we covered that earlier, didn't we, James?
But so, yeah, these three annoying kids come on and say, oh, I just downloaded my first game and I've just... And I couldn't even do it as bad as they do it. And there's quite a few special appearances. There's one twit. Sorry, there's a bird.
what?
Big Bird comes on.
All right.
Because Big Bird is related very much to high technology, isn't he? And then the Microsoft Barmer comes on and talks over the MD of Qualcomm. Starts
the
talking about Microsoft.
On his face is just a picture.
That's awful.
It was just
also with Big Bird, you had the guy that led Big Bird on that had obviously killed Big Bird's younger brother and skinned him while wearing his outfit.
It's Kara.
So it just wasn't good then.
I assume we're talking about Big Bird from Sesame Street.
Yeah. Not Vanessa Feltz.
Well done, mate.
Sorry.
I think
Barmer probably looks the most ridiculous out of all of it.
That really takes some doing.
Terrible running onto the stage. Absolutely.
Was he jumping?
I love that gif you put on Twitter, James, of him chasing after the cake.
Oh, and Big Bird was followed up by Desmond Tutu.
You're kidding. That's a Dave Allen joke.
I think technology, think Desmond Tutu.
Of course.
As you do, yeah.
And the Catholic Church. Oh, so this wasn't... So the kids that came on weren't... it wasn't a film. They were actors.
No, they were live on the screen. Oh, then there was an inexplicable performance by Maroon 5.
Oh, surely I can just play a little bit of their... Can I just play a little bit of their language that they use?
Please do.
Go ahead, yeah.
Foreign Mobile.
An electronic Vols voice for no particular reason.
It was just
as well.
Random. Completely random.
Sounds it.
I've just seen the picture of Barmer running on stage and he doesn't... They've caught him at an inopportune moment.
That's not hard with him.
There really. We go. Have you had enough of them yet?
Yeah, that's it. I love that the Verge has covered it and they've got some stills on there. And when Tutu comes on, their line underneath says the cognitive dissonance reached an all new high when Big Word was replaced by Archbishop Desmond Tutu on the screen.
It was utterly inexplicable. The thing is, right, what this says, though, is the fact that we're talking about this, we probably spent longer talking about this than any, apart from 4K television, anything else at CES, just suggests that what CES is becoming is just a shop window for absolute bizarre behaviour. Wasn't there that tablet company who did... 2 years in a row, they tried to launch a tablet in a rather death-defying way. That's right, yeah. It's every year it seems to be something odd that grabs people's attention. Who knows? Qualcomm might actually make a decent product and everyone goes, they're the one that had Desmond Tutu on there. But it's unlikely.
They've got a picture there of Alice Eve and she looks really glazed over. And I'm not surprised because she was in London yesterday for the BAFTA nominations ceremony. And she's in the same dress, I'm sure of it. So no wonder she's glazed over.
I have no idea who she is. Why was she on there?
She's an actress. She's in the new Star Trek movie.
And? And she uses Qualcomm equipment all the time? What does she do with it?
No, it looks like she's still comatose from a couple of diazepam on the plane over. Because she was in London yesterday for the BAFTA Awards.
It's heavily medicated.
I mean, is there anything that's good that's come out of CES this year? Because I really have struggled. As I say, Barry
Android rice
tweeted
cooker.
Out stuff, and I couldn't find anything. An Android
the
rice
most
cooker.
Interesting thing I thought, now that's something that looks quite futuristic and could go somewhere interesting, was the paper thin e-ink paper. That was very clever looking. I couldn't quite figure out what the use for it would be yet, but I like the idea of it. And certainly it looks like it would be a good medium for reading a newspaper on or something like that, maybe. Have you seen that?
This was, I'm trying to find it because I think I have.
You put a link in for it.
I did put a link in for it, didn't I? And I can't find the damn story now.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it.
I can find all the other crap that I didn't want to talk about.
Paper tab, flexible tablets.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, flexible tablets, the paper tab.
Well, we've been waiting for that for years, though, haven't we?
No, but this is the point. It was this actually an item that you could pick up that works, or was this a piece of plastic with a piece of paper shoved up through it, like they did a couple of years ago? It was. I mean, that was the god awful part of it.
It looked like it was a working thing on the video.
Well, that's a first.
But I've got to say, on the video, they have to sort this out if they're going to make it work. On the video, they've got all these little bits of, you know, e-ink paper around on the table, but they've all got massive cables plugged into them.
That's right. It had to be powered by an i7 PC, apparently.
And I was like, well, that looks crap. Who wants? It's got to have its own power supply, and they've all got to be linked to each other wirelessly or Bluetooth or something. You can't have all these cables trailing everywhere.
Well, you can imagine it having like a thick binder edge, which has got all the technology in it, and you end up sort of having to grip it like that, and it sort of flaps around. Yeah, they're going to have to think really hard about how to present that to the public, because otherwise all you'll get is a tablet with a flexible screen on the front of it. You can't flex because it's on a hard back.
I'll just defy the point of it.
I'm just trying to get a picture up here of it. There we go. That's the item. And you're saying that looked like it was a real thing. It wasn't just a mock-up of a... you've got to say, it looks like a photocopy that's been sealed in a plastic wallet.
Yeah. In the video, but it's got cables in it. They actually show it working.
Yeah. I've just posted the video in the chat room. And yeah, it is real. It's working. Does some clever stuff, like you touch it against another paper tab. Imagine having different bits of paper on your desk and you touch one bit of paper against another bit of paper and it automatically takes on the form of the paper that you've just touched it against. I guess you're putting it in a certain mode to do that. It's
there was other clever things, wasn't it? It was like, I think if you were reading something, it was if you used your finger or whatever to bend the corner one way, you flicked forwards, and if you bend it the opposite direction, you flick backwards. So that's how you turn the page, just by sort of bending the corner slightly. Could be a nuisance if you get it wrong, I suppose.
Well, it's a good way of working out which page you're on as well.
Yeah. I mean, you could do other things with it, couldn't you? Like, I think awesome. In one of them, they show like a photograph, and then the guy taps it against a document or something, and it transfers the photograph directly into the document on the other
page. So you're having to sort of put it down and trace it.
Very good.
So it's clever. It's really clever, but I don't know how they're going to make it work.
Just the cables going into the thing. It makes it look like it's a transplant victim.
I mean, it's a concept, and it's early days with it. And you know, they'll find ways to deal with this so that you can actually have it so it's completely flexible.
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing as well, I would imagine, like it being at CES or whatever, if another company sees it and thinks, hello, that's rather clever, you know, they might throw some serious money at them and give them all the tools to miniaturise and simplify it and stuff.
Well, I mean, if this thing is truly flexible and it's showing images and manipulating data, that's well beyond just proof of concept, isn't it? You've only got the data and the power to sort out, yeah.
It's a working thing, and it's the only thing that I've seen so far where I thought, crikey, that is a proper futuristic-looking thing, that. It's not just a tweak on everything that's already existed. It's genuinely something quite new.
There's the chat room wants to talk about the Steam console. Am I guessing that that's this thing?
It's that sort of little mini
thing, isn't it? That's the Android phone, I know. There's another one, that's the NVIDIA one, isn't there?
That's not the Steam console. The Steam console is this thing that's like a DVD, a Blu-ray player that sits, again, it's one of these things that sits under your telly. So it's like an Xbox, except it's based on the Steam ecosystem. So you buy your games through Steam. Right. I'm not entirely sure myself, because unless it can really kick the butt of the Xbox 360 and the PS2 or PS3 and whatever is coming next from Xbox, from Sony and Microsoft, and if it can get out sooner rather than later, that's perfect. But I was looking at these, it brings us on nicely to these two, the little thing you can clip your Android phone into and turn it into a joystick thing. I like that. That is really good, because...
Yeah, that's the thing I'm showing on the screen at the minute.
I play more games on my Android phone than any kind of classic console, and also Nvidia making the move to have a separate gaming machine. People aren't going to want to take those around with them. That's my that's my contention on this. And it's the same with the Steam device. Do people want yet another device that sits underneath their television? Because, right, I can watch YouTube now. I've worked it out on four different devices on my telly: my TiVo, my Nintendo Wii, my Xbox 360 and my Blu-ray player. All will play YouTube videos. I don't need to play them on all of them.
But the big show off you.
Alex is making a point in the chat room here that the Steam system is download only, and that's why the games community is probably going to embrace it in terms of the software developers, because it's download only, because the piracy element disappears.
Which means you haven't got an optical slot.
Steam's very good for that. I think the box is quite reasonable technology too, from what I read. It's based on i5 technology and quite reasonable graphics. So as far as competing with the current console market, it will probably do that. And if you have a look at the breadth of games available on Steam, pretty much anything you want's there. So maybe it's a good way of using your nice big 4K TV to play.
Yes, if they can make it 4K, then they've got a winner on their hands.
Except it only goes up to 600 by 800. What about the 27-inch... tablet from LG, the Lenovo.
Oh dear God, that was the funniest thing
that's
I saw.
A funny tablet.
Not calling it a tablet. It's a
tray.
Well, it's designed for photographers, isn't it, Ewan?
Well,
it's a digital abortion. That's what it is. It's just hideous.
I mean, the only thing that bothered me was it's 27 inches, and the best resolution they can get out of it's 1920 by 1080, and that's criminal. You would have thought they could have at least gone up to 27 inch monitor resolution, like the Apple monitor. But what I found interesting was some of the applications that they showed that this could be used for, with a keyboard underneath it for presentations, as a table. You could stand it up as a screen. And I did tweet out, you know, that have Microsoft actually been quite visionary, because you've got a producer who's now producing a 10-finger multi-touch 27-inch screen that you can start dabbing. And if you look at my daughter, who's 3 years old, whenever she goes near a screen now, all she wants to do is put her finger on it and swipe it. She is in that genre. And Microsoft have got the only operating system which is broad enough to encompass other tablets. Yes, there's bespoke stuff and there's tailored stuff, but in terms of, right, here's a system that you can suddenly use for touch straight away, it's the only one that's out there on the market at the moment.
I'm quite impressed, actually, with, one of the Windows, Microsoft keynote mentioned the fact that they've got, I think it may have been the Qualcomm keynote, I can't remember now, it was a long time ago. They said they've got like hundreds of thousands of applications for Windows 8 now, and Windows Modern and Windows Tablets. Actually, they really are catching up. And I think if they can carve out their niche, they've got, and make it usable, because I think they do still have a lot of work to do under the bonnet to make it so it's acceptable for people to use and not confusing. They could really have a winner there. In fact, I've got I showed off my little netbook a couple of weeks ago. It's only got a little screen, but it runs Windows 8 and it's got the modern display, and you boot it up. And the number of times I've gone to touch it, go, no, I can't touch it. Bugger!
Because it's you're used to using the Windows 8 on something where you can touch it.
Absolutely. My whole paradigm now is I've got a phone that I can sort of press a button on, and I don't have to use mimouses are really outdated technology. We need to reinvent the mouse.
I actually think the Windows 8 and the whole touch screen thing and the way it's going down to Windows Pro on tablets and that, just to upset the guy that wrote in, is actually the death knell for RIM, because I don't think there's room for four big players, and I think Microsoft are going to take that spot away from RIM, and RIM will, and it sounds the death knell for RIM as far as I can see.
Why do you think it's related to BlackBerry?
Well, just point of view of tablets and smartphones and so forth, that really, when you look at the market share between Android and iOS already, there really is only room probably for one more big player. And Microsoft now have really probably cemented themselves into that spot with Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 and on the tablets and everything else like that. And RIM is so far behind the game with far as releasing a product is concerned. I mean, we're not going to see any of BlackBerry 10 before the earliest the end of January, and who knows when they'll actually ship devices. I think they've missed the boat, and I think it's too late. And I think that basically Windows now will form the third player in the in what will be a market for three significant players in that area.
I mean, do you think in a few years' time, 3 years' time, that enterprise will generally be going Windows 8 for phones then, or Windows whatever for phones?
Yet to be seen. I mean, iOS has made a significant impact in that area over the last 12 months or so, based on, one would say, better security, I guess, on the iOS platform over Android. But certainly Windows have got an opportunity to come back and take that market again. I mean, the fact they've got Office running on tablets gives them the opportunity to come in and take that back again from an enterprise standpoint. They've still got huge market share from a Windows desktop point of view within the enterprise. So, yeah, I think there's a good chance they can come in and secure that business back again and take the mobile phone part of it or the smartphone part of it away from RIM completely.
I think a lot of it's going to hang on how quickly enterprise adopt Windows 8. And I think if it does actually start to make some serious inroads there and companies do actually start taking it seriously, I think it actually could start making inroads into Apple. And
but people
Android
are only going
quite,
to, yeah,
quite severely.
Unfortunately, people are only going to migrate from Windows 7, which worked fairly well, if they get devices which are Windows 8, you know, which benefit from the features that Windows 8 gives, because Windows 8 is just like the Metro front end with Windows 7 in the background. Yes, it's got some improvements, but ostensibly it's the front end, it's the user experience which is transferable to a tablet or a mobile device, which is what they're selling. And unless they want to invest in touchscreen monitors for the office, it's unlikely, I would have thought, that companies will actually take that during their refresh cycle.
So it's not about Windows 8. Sorry, it's not about Windows 8 on the desktop. It's about the drive in most enterprise businesses now for mobile workers to be having a tablet and having a smartphone. And that's where the Windows 8 adoption will come in. The desktop will follow eventually at some next refresh cycle.
Well, of course, the whole point of that is if you get a tablet, you can dock it into a dock on your desk, and actually it becomes a Windows 8 PC. So you're absolutely right. It could be the way ahead.
Mm. Yeah.
Sarah, tell Simon to watch his language, mate. He's not talking to me, so.
In the chat room.
Yeah, it's very good.
what amused me was the promotional video they had for that Lenovo tablet, which had me in hysterics. It was like the guy's doing something on, he has it on his desktop, and he turns around and supposedly his two very young children have managed to pick up this 27-inch monster and carry it into the lounge and put it on the floor. And he just calmly walks in. And I think anybody would be in hysterics if their kids had picked
absolutely
that up off the table.
Put that down gently! Right down!
Dancing on the on the tray.
But the 27-inch was not the biggest touch tablet at CES. It was a 38 as well.
Yeah, there was a huge one. And it was tablet in inverted commas, definitely. I just think, I mean,
you're going to need a finger for that or a whole hand to swipe?
Well, this thing's 10-finger multi-touch, and it can sense the difference between the people that are touching it as well.
It's standing.
Paul's making a chat comment in the chat room here. He's saying manufacturers really need to work out whether they want to use screens or touchpads. That really annoys me. And I think, I don't know if he's saying that they need to pick one or the other, whether he's saying that they don't need to pick one or the other. Because one of the things that I've done, now I've got a nice 27-inch monitor up there, the Apple display, and it looks gorgeous. But I'm actually quite close to it because I'm slowly going blind. But when notifications come up, I don't want to move my mouse up and get rid of them. I'd love to reach up and dab the piss off button and then get back to what I was doing without having to move the mouse around. I'd like the ability to just reach over, grab the screen and do odd things with my spare hand and then go back to my user interface for my video with the mouse. I think there's a real opportunity there for a mixed format of interaction. You can use a mouse with this, but you can also use giving people choice. And I just saw that and thought, someone's actually taken up the Metro interface and they've run with it and they've given over what people are probably going to want soon.
Yeah. And listen, by the way, that the odd thing Ewan was doing with his other hand at the time was dabbing the screen.
But let's face it, the reality is they're not going to pick one or the other. Give it another 12 months or so and it will be only one. Every screen will be a touch screen. So it's not going to go one way or the other. It's going to be a combination of the two technologies, and virtually everything we have will have a touch screen on.
Yeah, you see, Paul's saying they need to pick one or the other, but I disagree. I think they've got to have. I think they want flexibility. They can have touchpad, you can have mouse, you can have screen touch, you can do whatever you want. You interface with your computer the way that you choose, not the way that I choose, and that's Apple's problem because Apple has always picked the way.
I've been very much impressed with. Well, you say it's Apple's problem. But Apple have developed Siri and Google voicey type thing where you read something out to the phone. It's just amazing. And even our Xbox has got, which really annoys the kids when they start winding each other up, shouting stuff while they're playing games. Even the Kinect's got voice recognition, so you can shout pause halfway through an important lap of a course. So yes, there are millions of ways of there are many ways to interface with a computer, and I just think making sure that the computer does exactly what you're expecting it to do when you want it to do it without too much inconvenience is the key. And it's all about the usability. And if people really get... it was Windrider who was pointing to links to on the Microsoft store of all places to Windows 8. And there are some people saying really bad usability things about it. If they can get that right, if they can make people smile when they use it rather than cringe, I think they could be on a winner.
Well, if you're going to do... like a portable large tablet that you can move around and change, it's got to be light, hasn't it? The lady in the video carrying it looks so awkward and cumbersome with this thing, two-handed, you know, and she's trying her best to smile as she
wrestles it across the room. Yeah, the thing that's from my own viewpoint of having a look at the 27-inch monitor, I was talking about the fact that because I've bought an Apple 27-inch cinema display, they're bound to be bringing out a thin one now. But I've looked at it and I've got to say I think they probably have issues with the power supply to a lot of these things because it's an awful lot of power to keep a screen like that going. You look at the amount of heat that it generates, clearly there's got to be energy in equals energy out on that at some point, I think the transformers and the mains power adapters that are in it, that's what's killing them on size and it's what's killing them on weight.
You could use it to defrost a steak.
I suppose it may be why the resolution isn't that hot as well, Ewan, because you're going to need beefier batteries and whatnot to drive it if it's got a higher res.
Bookery in the chat room says he wants a 17-inch roll-up tablet, please. Thank you very much. And he's done with touch. He wants to control via telepathy now. And Simon wonders why I'm not talking. He thinks I'm not talking to him. You need to talk to James, and James will explain it to me. So
yes. I think
that may come one day, and that would be brilliant. Can you imagine that if you just had like a mat like the kids currently have with that, you know, that drive their little cars around with the pretendy streets and things on, and you could just roll it out on the floor, and as a family all get around it and start playing different games with, you know, multi-touch. I mean, that would be impressive.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, they've already got that, because if you draw on my screen with water, it'll change colour as well.
I think there's an interesting...
And end up being a game of chase my son around the lounge.
And so will you.
Steve's got a serious point.
If you think about how you use your tablet, if it was flexible, as in paper-like, would you be able to use it in the way you use it now? So, for instance, if you're normally with the bed, with the paper in bed before whatever on the tablet... But imagine doing that on a flexible bit of tablet in bed wouldn't work.
Yes, it would. You used to do it with a newspaper, didn't you?
Absolutely, yes. Some stiffness is required.
Moving on from stiffness in bed. Because for anyone over 35, that actually means cramp.
the ideal sort of thing, material, would be something like... have you seen these sort of wristband things some of the kids wear where you can just kind of flick it and it curls automatically?
Snap bands,
I think you can get watches like that. Well, that'd be quite good, wouldn't it? Because that would allow it to go rigid, but also allow you to roll it up and put it in and carry it and things like that.
If you've tuned into this podcast halfway through, it's not what you think.
So if I flick it, it goes rigid?
British Stiffness Podcast.
We have a title. Steve, no, I mean, if you're talking about having something stiff in bed, I mean, you read a newspaper in bed, didn't you?
Well, somebody,
and that was floppy.
On the chat room there, it's like a bit like reading a newspaper on the train. Isn't that really awkward?
It is if it's a broadsheet.
Yeah.
But it's not, I mean, if you had a tabloid and you fold it in half.
You read a newspaper on the train, you're not touching it, you're not poking it, you're not moving, swiping it. Imagine swiping you're holding a newspaper which is flexible and then you've got to swipe it. But you hold it with one hand and then, you can't swipe it because trying to swipe it.
They've got to deal with that, though. I mean, but you don't. I mean, like, that's the Kindle thing, because you don't swipe the Kindle, do you? So, the original Kindle, you use buttons that are on the outside of it. So there's got to be pressure points that you can pinch with your fingers. It's a two-sided interface now, isn't it? Because you've got that pinch, the opposing thumb interface as opposed to swipe.
Or it's got to be voice activated, which would be.
Can you imagine everyone talking to their tablet on a train?
Oh, yeah, good point. Thinking about in bed.
I'm just thinking about the conversations you could have in bed over swipe and tablets and flick and stiffness, and they could be misinterpreted wildly.
Yeah.
Did you see the phone that is e-ink on the back?
Yeah. There was a mock-up of that a few weeks ago, wasn't there?
Yeah, they've actually demoed it at CES.
And Steve, your impressions?
Interesting. Good to try new stuff. I don't know how often you'd actually use it. I suppose if you're reading books on a phone a lot, then that might be the phone for you.
Well, maybe. I mean, that's the thing is, if you look at the high res versus low res interaction with your phone, there's an awful lot of stuff that's coming out on my Retina display on my iPhone 4S that's actually of no real value at that kind of resolution. So I'm thinking things like contacts or calendar. I don't need to see things in that kind of resolution. It's not graphically intense, so why not give it me an e-ink on the back?
Well, I would say that if it saves battery to any extent whatsoever, it's exactly. Go for me.
Yeah. Mm. That would be useful. If you're scrolling through contacts,
trying to change the behaviour of the user of the phone, it really has got to get. It comes down to usability, but it has to be almost innate that people turn their phone around to do this, rather than working around it or not bothering, which most people would probably, well, I certainly would do.
So, if you wanted to send Clive an email instead of doing it through the graphical interface on the front, which is vastly overpowered for the function that you want, you turn over, and there's an e-ink there that doesn't sap your battery power, that gives you simple access to simple data.
I just go, send Clive an email. Not that one. Like that.
Go on, Steve.
Two problems I see with that.
Whoa, stop. Go on, Steve. Sorry, just start again.
Yep. I spend most of my time on the tube trying to read people's phones over their shoulder. If it's suddenly the same thing on the back of their phone, when I'm sitting opposite on the tube, I'll end up trying to read it from across the corridor. It'll be a nightmare. That'd be quite good fun, actually.
Sorry, Dale, you were saying as well?
I was just going to say that the two problems I see with that is, firstly, no matter which way you put the phone down, you're going to put it down on its screen, which just bothers me straight away.
Mm.
The second thing is, how much thickness does putting the e-ink display on the back of the device add to it, and how much extra battery life would you get by just putting a bigger battery in rather than adding all that extra thickness technology on the back of it?
Well, if you've got the wobbly thin screen, it wouldn't add an awful lot of thickness. It's just the cables to the lead acid battery that you're carrying around on your back pocket.
In backpack.
In a backpack, even, yeah. Absolutely. There was one other story I wanted to cover, and I can't find it now. So there we go.
Oh, well.
Oh, yeah, it was the Google Glasses thing. There's supposedly now a competition for the Google Glass. This is from Vuzix, who are the people that gave you that horrible thing that you didn't want to sit on a plane that was virtual reality type stuff in front of your face. They come up with an idea of Google Glass that sits over the front of you, and it's powered by Android as well as. So they've only taken Google software to use it to run their new system. But the word on the street was it was passable. Not bad.
Well, that's
at
better
all.
Than one would expect, because normally having something over your eye, which just gets in the way and makes you look like a Borg, would be probably not the first thing on people's minds.
I'm genuinely concerned about how this works, because it's going to affect your binocular vision.
From what I understand, the Google Glass thing actually superimposes things direct to the... You don't actually focus on them using your lens. It sends it directly through to the retina.
But your eye won't... Well, depends how they do it, but your eye can't focus on two things at the same time.
It's not focusing, is my understanding.
So how do they set the focus point?
Beaming it right into your retina.
It's sending it straight into focus at a distance that means that it hits the retinal receptors directly rather than going through.
It's always in focus no matter where you're looking in front of you?
Yes, because it's too close to actually focus on. I mean, I can barely focus at arm's length now, so there's no way that my eye muscles will be able to pull something that's that close to my eye into focus.
Got you.
Okay. It would have to come in directly.
As Windrider says in the chat room, a real retina display. he's on form.
He is. He's doing well tonight.
Time of the morning.
Richard, how safe is that sort of thing to do that? If it's doing it on a constant basis,
I think it'd probably be all right. You'd probably get headaches, I suspect. To be quite honest, I think it'd be too much information coming in all at the same time.
Do you think they might?
But that's not going to be physical damage.
What, sorry?
I mean, you can't damage your eye through using it. That you know, the people that say that your eye gets worse the more that you look at TV and that kind of stuff, utter rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. You can't damage your eye through using it. And you can't damage your eye through receiving light on the retina, providing that light is not up to the power of the sun or, you know, something that's vastly over intense for it. If all it's doing is receiving light, the bigger issue and the headache that Rich is talking about, I would suggest there, is more about making sense of what's coming in rather than the physicality of or the physiology of receiving the light. There is nothing there to stop that being a perfectly good process.
The chat room made an interesting point about burn-in, though.
Will you get burned?
Yeah, it just worries me, the thought of actually something else.
My eyes are hurting just thinking about it.
Go on, Sarah.
It just worries me, the thought of something else, something being projected into my eye, forcing me to say, look at me, look at me, look at me, when I'm trying to look out there.
Well, don't buy the glasses then, girl.
No, I'm not saying it's not a good idea, and I love the concept of it, but I'd rather have something that actually is going to, you know, I'm wearing glasses right now, that is actually going to project something onto the glasses here at the right size, just so that I can actually read it and just sort of look over
No, hang on a second, because you couldn't do that. By the sheer fact that you're wearing those glasses, projecting something onto that lens wouldn't help you focus on it because it's too close. Mm. Because the actual focal point of your eye, because of the glasses, which is helping you focus, it's helping your older and tired eyes to bring them into focus, is that naturally a minimum sort of 6 inches away from where the glass lens is. It has to go into the eye, otherwise you wouldn't see it.
But wouldn't the glasses that I'm wearing, say this part of the glass here, actually be set up so that it's the right strength to actually allow me to read it on the glass?
No, it couldn't, because the intensity of that would be enormous. You wouldn't be able to pull your eye into that kind of focus. And I'm no optician, but I know that, you know, from the stuff that I did when I did ergonomics, that I know that you can't damage your eye, and you can't pull it various parts of it into focus and out of focus. It doesn't work that way.
The real issue, I think, like I say, is when you're trying to walk down the street or whatever, and your brain's sort of trying to take in noise around you, what you see in front of you, you're thinking about what's going on in your day ahead, and then you've got, you know, I don't know, whatever, your Twitter feed or whatever going directly into your eye as well at the same time. I just think it's a recipe for disaster, really. And so, you know, there's a lot of accidents going to be caused by it.
To be fair as well, though, Richard, I mean, the brain has got natural filtering processes that it learns. So you walk into a room, you hear a loud noise, and 15 minutes later, you're not listening to that noise anymore because the brain has adapted. So, you know, you'd hope.
But if that's the case, and you know, your brain automatically sort of says, I've got to take notice of what's going on around me, which hopefully it will do, then it kind of makes it a bit redundant, doesn't it, in a way?
Well, in some respects, I contest what you say in some respects, Ewan, because in spite of the fact your brain ignores it, unfortunately, it's taking effort to do that, and you end up with fatigue.
I'd agree with that.
Example of that. Yeah. And if you've got this thing in your eyes all the time, actually, you could probably end up getting quite tired and overloaded by it. So I can see Richard's point.
I agree. Yeah. No.
Is there another reason why they might be doing this?
Go on.
Through doing this, could could they find out where your eye is looking?
They don't want to know where my eyes are looking.
Well, unless they've got camera in it that looks back. I mean, they've got they have got cameras that they use on people when they do visual pattern searches and things on controls, where there's a tiny camera in the glasses that they've got on that points at their eye, and it tracks where their eye goes. So if there's a camera that's looking back at the eye, it could know where you're going, but it wouldn't be able to do it unless it was physically looking at the eye.
No, I'm just thinking, if the Google Glass is beaming into the retina to show the image, if the retina does the retina change its angle or its position to allow Google to know what you're looking at, which particular ad is more attractive than another, or
I wouldn't have thought so.
It wouldn't cost them too much to put a little camera in there, though, would it?
No, but then they'd have to declare it.
Yeah, that's true. They might have to mention it.
There would be a secret camera.
You're looking at another lady's bottom. Would you like to buy some underwear?
Or, yes, or I tell your wife.
Yeah, would you like to live with a divorce lawyer?
Yes. Oh, blimey, we could go in. That's a sketch right there. This part,
I just posted a link to the best demonstration I saw at CNET, which is the Gorilla Glass 3. If anyone needs to calm down after watching the keynote earlier posted, then watch that demonstration, because it's absolutely mind-numbingly brilliant.
It's turgid. Three times more scratch resistant than the previous generation, though.
It's rolling balls against a bit of glass. If that gets you going, then we'll have a watch that. I did for about 3 minutes, enjoyed it, but
the Gorilla Glass is pretty good. I have to say that this week, I've got a pair of trousers that I use that have got a little pocket in them that's perfectly formed for my iPhone, but the Velcro's gone on the top of it, and my iPhone jumped out of that just above my knee and landed face down on some rough stone on Monday night, and I fully expected to turn it over and see the face crazed, and it wasn't. It was absolutely fine. So, huzzah, Corning. Well done. This podcast and all of this is brought to you by UK2.net. They've kept us going for a very long time, and we're going to be with them for another year or 18 months already anyway. If you want anything for the web, when you buy it from them, you're effectively giving a thumbs up to British Tech Network, because they give us kudos for all of the offer codes that we use and all the click-throughs off our page. So if you go to britishtechnetwork.com and then go on the sponsors link, you'll see UK2's logo. Click on that. Even if you just want to sign into your account, they give us kudos for having sent you to that. They know you're a returning customer through BTN. And when you do buy something on that page on the sponsors link, there is an absolute ton of codes that will get you vast amounts of money off your basket. Some really big deals, £50 and £60 off the things that you're buying or more. So please support UK2. They've got loads of stuff for the web. You'll find their price is pretty competitive anyway, I think, let alone before you start adding your discount on. And when you're with them, tech support's great. They're just brilliant. Look after them because they look after us. Please, please, please support our sponsors. And please use the click-through. Just click the click. Just get through there and just show that you're being sent through from British Tech Network, and keep them happy that we're pumping the information towards you about what they can do for you. Thanks very much. Also, we've still got the British Tech Network shows. Six of them are up for European Podcast of the Year. We've been voting hard over Christmas, and you need to do the same, because we're down to the last week and a half now. We've only got 10 days or so of voting left. So please go to britishtechnetwork.com and you'll see all the show links there. All the big six shows: Media, Gamer, iOS, Photo, Big and Mac. Click on those, vote for us, and vote for us as many times as you can. Close your browser, open it up again and vote again. Close it down, open it up and vote again. 10 times a day, and get us tons and tons of votes, and make it look suspicious like we've cheated, please.
Little bit of a tip for you here. Do it at work.
Because?
Because you're at your desk. Just go, alt tab away from your Excel spreadsheet or your email, whatever you do, a couple of clicks. It's just like a break. It's like a bit of fresh air and then back to work. It'll make you feel better.
Relaxation for your eyes.
Indeed.
That's actually increasing your productivity at work at the same time.
There you go.
Giving you a break.
Richard, as a doctor, wouldn't you suggest that voting for British Tech Network could be beneficial to your health?
I would agree so.
Otherwise, I'll dangle you over a balcony. There we go. Right, it's that time. It's the cool thing. Jimmy Boy Hart, you're going to start us off as ever.
Absolutely. I was rather impressed. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to move to one device. And one of the big sticking points for me was a decent podcatcher for Android phones, because you've got Downcast for the iPhone, which is just phenomenal. I've had that on my iPod Touch for as long as I've, you know, for as long as I've known about it. And they just don't do it for the Android phone. But they a company, in fact, a few people have recommended it to me, called Pocket Casts. It's a couple of quid to buy, but it really is excellent. One of the real impressive things about it is you click the refresh button, and within 5 seconds, it said, right, these are all the podcasts. I've got 60 podcasts, and within 5 seconds, it's got them all. I don't know how it does it. It must have some kind of cached RSS feeds on its server, but it downloads, it gets the list of things to download really quickly. And then you can either use the Android download function or its own download function to individually download the podcast, and you can listen to them. It's still under development. It's version 3 at the moment. He's working on version 4. I wanted to give Philip a big shout out, because it's really great when you send a bit of feedback to a developer and they email you back personally. That's really good. And so I can recommend Pocket Casts to you as a listener to enjoy the British Tech Network on, all of it.
Well done, Philip. Pocket Casts, good man. Good pick.
Sounds good.
We'll put a link in the show notes. Thanks very much to Miles Wheatley, who does the show notes. He's Paul Wheatley's dad. And every week he sits and plays through all the drivel that we don't update in the document and has to listen to the podcast to try and find out what we bloody recommended. So, Miles, thank you ever so much, mate. Do appreciate it. Steve-O, what have you got for us, pal? You're on mute, dude. You're on mute. Still on mute.
A live demo.
Oh, here we go. Yep.
Right, here is a torch. It's big and it's got a huge battery in it. So I'm going to turn off. Oh, no, I'm not going to turn off the light.
Now, we've never met that torch before.
They've never met that torch before. So that's the torch I get. And this is a LED Lenser P7, which sounds very impressive. I've put the link in the chat room. Well, there's currently 35% off on Amazon on this torch. And this thing is pretty impressive, isn't it? That's the... apologies for anyone who's
on the audio podcast, yes.
But you turn this little torch... I've got two torches in my hand. One is the size of a brick, and one is the size of a bit bigger than a... That's a big, big pen. But you put this second torch on, this LED Lenser P7, and it just blows the big torch away in terms of the light that it kicks out.
That's impressive. Price?
That is.
It's 35% off as well at the moment in Amazon. I've put the link in.
How many LEDs has it got in there?
It's got one massive one. I've got one as well.
It's got
one
big one.
Wow.
Absolutely love my Lenser.
Oh, there we go. Look, see, Jimmy Hart's got one too. It must be good.
Yep.
Yep. So that's my pick.
Excellent.
It's tiny as well. It's about the size of your hand, so it goes from the top of your fingers down to where my thumb starts, so it's nice and small. If I hold it, it's just about nice. It's about the right size in terms of the length of my hand. So
that would be your wrist, dude. Where your thumb starts, it's your wrist.
No, it goes from the... No, it goes
All right,
from,
okay.
There you go. Top of my fingers to the top of my thumb.
And, it's a type of torch you do not shine into somebody's eyes because it hurts. It's got.
We gathered that when you shined it at the cameras.
Mm.
It is bright. It is really impressive, Steve.
It's. It actually comes as a weapon as well, because it does say that you can use it to shine in someone's eyes. So next time I meet someone in a dark night, I'll shine it straight. Oh, in
it's got two modes as well. I hadn't grasped that. So you can.
It's got focus.
You can have a wide field of view or a close.
Yeah, so the top of the lens pulls down, and if you push it back up, then it changes the focus beam of the torch.
Very deadly.
That's even better now. I'm very happy.
And you press the button on the back again, and it turns it into a proper torch, which doesn't blind people.
Yeah, there's three modes. There's if you push the button in the back on, it goes straight on to high mode, which is defense mode, i.e. very bright. Push it again, it goes to medium mode. Push it again, it goes to battery saving mode, which is still better than my.
It's like using full beam in the car, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Very good. That's like that.
Okay.
Like that, good pick. Stick the link in the doc for us, mate.
The thing I was really pleased about it, because I was a little bit worried about it, is I worried that my P7 wouldn't work on rechargeable batteries, because these things, I mean, they take, that's it, 4 AAA batteries, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 AAA batteries, and I was worried it wouldn't take rechargeable ones, because they do, I mean, it's got a lot of light coming out of it, and they do eat them up. But you stick a set of rechargeable batteries in it, four rechargeable batteries in your bag, just in case they run out, and you've got yourself something to go camping with.
How long does it last on the full batteries? So I only got it today, so.
Oh. Well, I don't use it all the time, but it doesn't. I mean, I've had these batteries in for 2 weeks now, and it's still bright as ever.
It's at 130 hours on on the Amazon site.
Good
when
grief.
I hit the one click.
Pretty good.
I did the one click, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, excellent, yeah. Excellent. Sarah?
Is it Cree? Is that the manufacturer?
It's LED Lenser, L-E-N-S-E-R, and they've got a whole range of them. This is the P7. And it's currently on Amazon, £38, discount from £59.
Excellent. Good pick. We've talked longer than that. We have about the news stories. Sarah, what have you got for us, girl?
I haven't got one, I'm afraid.
Oh, you've had 4 weeks to prepare, girl.
Mm.
Never mind. Dale, new boy, have you got one? You're on mute.
I'm just turning off. So I had 2 minutes to prepare. iPad mini case. Anyone seen the Portenzo cases? Portenzo.com.
Right.
Portenzo. Nice leather case if you have an iPad or an iPad mini. Makes it look like a book, which means that people are less likely to snatch it off you on the tube or out of your bag. And does some clever things as far as folding is concerned. So mounts itself up like that, so you can use it, watch videos on it whatsoever. But it's just a nice case from a point of view of protecting the iPad mini. They do it for an iPad size as well. But comes in some nice, it's proper leather.
What are the names of those books? They call it the buckskin ones. They've got a brand name, isn't it? It looks like one of those, doesn't it?
It's a Dodo case, is the other competitor. Yeah.
Does it by any chance fit a Nexus 7?
I think they do a Nexus 7 one. So if you go to portenzo.com, I think they do a Nexus 7 one as well. But they do a range of them. But yeah, highly recommended. Had it now for a couple of weeks. That's I've had Dodo cases for iPad before, and this is actually a better quality case. So, yep, highly recommended. Portenzo.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Rich, what have you got for us, mate?
An app which I discovered today through one of our listeners, Neil Cochran, which is brilliant. It's called Glimpse, G-L-Y-M-P-S-E, Glimpse. You can check it out on their website. And they've got multiple apps for cross-platform. And the clever thing about it is you use the app on your device, and it sends a little link to the person that you're, say, going to visit. So in this case, Neil was coming to visit me. So he sent me a text message that said, you can see where I am. So I clicked on the message, and in the text, it opened up in a little browser window, and it showed in real time his position. And the user can set on that how long you want the other person to know your position for as well. So you can say, you can see where I am for the next 3 hours or what have you. You can also put in an ETA as well, so you've got an idea of when that person's going to get to you and stuff. I just thought it was brilliant, a really clever little thing, and great for, I think, people who, you know, travel between jobs as well. So instead of being harassed every 5 minutes, you know, where are you, they can see. And you don't have to, because it's time limited to your choice, they don't have constant access to your location neither.
You can set out a general one as well, because you can link it to your Twitter account, and you can tell the entire world where you are for 15 minutes as well.
Right.
And it'll tweet out, so you link your Twitter account to it, and you pick your recipients, and you can pick Twitter and say, right, everyone, here's where I am, and you can be in a pub and say, everyone come and have a beer.
Cool.
Not that I'd recommend this, but it's quite good fun doing it on the plane as well. It shows you your speed.
Look how fast I'm going.
I did it the other week when I was in Trafalgar Square, and I said, first person to come and say hello wins a prize.
I think it's brilliant. I'm definitely getting it. Even just for use between sort of me and my wife, it'll be brilliant.
But you do know it's free as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a win-win scenario.
I'm definitely getting it because it's free.
I'm no skinflint in the App Store.
No, God. Good man.
I'm happy to pay if they're good.
And that's Glimpse spelt
GLYMPSC. I think, yeah, it's available for other platforms, definitely.
All of them. Yeah. Windows, BlackBerry. See, there's something for BlackBerry still. Google.
Sorry, Paul. That's what you get for being a BlackBerry user, Jesus.
Fortran was announced this week for BlackBerry, wasn't it?
Fortran?
Yeah, the programming language.
They were released about the same time, weren't they?
Ching!
My pick is from China. I found a Chinese store called East Grow or something like that. I'll put it in the doc. But it's a light from a company called, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Nanguang, who might be Chinese or they might be Korean or something like that. And you get a nice little bag with it, and it's actually a really good quality bag. But what it is a little LED light. There you go. And it goes on the top of your camera, and you get a hot shoe mount with it, and you put the hot shoe mount in, and then that links onto your hot shoe for your flash on the top of your camera. It doesn't link electronically or anything like that. And then you get a little block that you can put normal batteries in, or you can look at the battery compatibility list that's on with it, and in there you'll find some obsolete VHS camera batteries that used to be around. This is one for, it's a 3000 milliamp hour battery to do with a Panasonic 16DS. And as long as you buy a charger, which is about a fiver, the batteries are going to cost you about a tenner, which is nothing. You plug it on the back, and then it's got a dimmable switch on it, so you can get your exact light level that you want. There we go. So I can...
That's like a flood lever light or a flashlight? A flash?
It's a bank of LEDs.
Oh, wow.
It's a whole bank.
It's on all the time?
Yeah, you put it on and it just runs. There you go. And if you've got the battery that's the old Panasonic knackered battery back, you just plug it into the charger and carry four or five of them and away you go. Here's the best thing, because if you buy more than one, they've got a little adjustable hot shoe mount on the top, and each other of them has a little receptor whereby you can actually link them together. There we go. So you can have two batteries running and two lights linked together, and it'll still fit on your hot shoe if you want. It's also got a little set of gels, so you can pull one set of gels out and replace it with either a pink or an orange gel set that comes with it. And the best bit is you get a little flexible piece of paper that comes with it as well. And that actually fits into two little clips that are on the front, and you get a diffuser, which actually is very, very good.
That's clever.
Excellent. They're not cheap. They're up to about $60 to buy. But I've used them this week for the first time on a commercial shoot, and they're ruddy great. They're absolutely brilliant. And the dimmable aspect of them as well is, if you open them up and you're shooting video, or if you're shooting a still, instead of screwing around with your f-stop settings or with your ISO settings, you can turn it up or turn it down to get a better look at the thing that you want to see. But the little packs are great. You get them on Amazon for Panasonic 16DS, CG16DS, and they sell you them for a tenner for a 3,000 milliamp hour battery, and the charger costs a fiver, and that's it, and you get about 4 or 5 hours out of it. Because it's LEDs, it's brilliant. It's nice, nothing. White, is it? It's pure
white.
I mean, it's pure white. If you take the there's a little diffuser with it automatically anyway, but if you take the original gel that comes with it to diffuse it, and you just put the light on itself, I mean, they are, you can't look at it, and they're stone cold white. They're beautiful.
It's really good.
It really is.
Get that idea, yeah.
And they come with a nice little bag as well, so you need to carry it all around in. There you go. $60. Put a link in the chat room. And I've got to say, the little Chinese store, the English that came back from the communications that I sent, because I asked them a few questions about it, they were really, really good, really keen to help. And I've got to say, if you go back 5 years or so, and you think about doing business with someone in China who's going to send you something through the post, honest, that's the way it was. And now I find more often than not that the Chinese retailers have got a better idea of customer services than most of the UK retailers. Jessops. Good riddance, you tossers. There we go.
Tell us what you think, Ewan.
There may well be more on that on the photo show tomorrow.
There may well. Alex doesn't agree with me, but what can I say? Everyone's entitled to be wrong. Where can we get a hold of you, James?
I haven't really been on Google Plus so far this year. I've been on Twitter, so SYZYGY, Syzygy.
Despite the fact that every bloody week you've said you can get me on Google Plus at.
No, I'm trying. I'm trying really hard. It's like the BlackBerry of social networks.
Sorry, Paul.
Sorry, Paul.
I think that's a bit unfair to BlackBerry.
It's a bit unfair to Google Plus.
Sorry, it's a bit unfair to Google. Yeah, sorry.
Steve, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
On Twitter, Steve Naber, NayBour, one word. And also on Monday, the 14th of January at the Coach and Horses in off Oxford Street. The Old Explorer just off Oxford Street. We are meeting up for the London Back User Group.
And they serve nice beer in there. What's that, Blue Moon or Blue Lagoon or something like that? It's a wheat beer.
Can't remember by the time I get to the bar.
It gives you a sodding headache. I know that much.
Yeah, but we're going to meet on Monday. We're doing special interest groups, so we'll break into about four or five different groups, and we'll cover different topics to help the different range of people that we have there. Be good to see anyone who wants to come down. That's Monday, the 14th of
next Monday,
January.
Yeah,
this coming Monday.
Coming, yeah.
Sarah, where can we get you, girl?
You can get me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK. Best place.
Excellent, Mrs. And off to Ireland Saturday?
On Saturday, yes.
So you'll be doing the show from there next week?
Yes, I will be.
Big aura. Dale, how was it first time, mate?
Yep. Good. I hope that's been good for you guys. It was good for me. Thanks for being gentle as a newbie. So I appreciate that.
You're Australian, mate. You need all the help you can get.
Appreciation still to follow.
Where can we get you, pal?
At Dale Townsend, all one word. So DaleTownsend on Twitter.
Good man. Thank you very much. Come again? Will you come again?
Yeah. Indeed.
Good man. And lastly, Dr. Rich.
Yep. On Twitter, at Rich Harkness. The blog, www.areyougettingacall.uk. I really need to change that. And also on another podcast called Back to the Mac every week.
With Johnny.
Johnny Winter.
How's it going?
Good. We're enjoying it. Episode 4 this week. Just out today.
I very much enjoyed your one about backups. Who knew there was so much to say about it?
That was cutting it short.
Wow.
That was edited.
Yeah.
Excellent. We'll be back again next week, as normal. Big show's on its roll again now, as we always did before. You see, we'll be here every week talking drivel. You can't. You've missed us, haven't you? Go on, be honest. Yes. See you next week. Don't forget to vote for us, please. And if you'd like to give us a donation to keep us afloat, then send it to us at bageltechnews@gmail.com on PayPal. And there's a little link on the website as well. Any donations that you send are gratefully received, and they all go back to tech to keep us up and running and keep stuff going. So thanks ever so much. See you next week.
Good night.
Night, guys.
Night.
Hi, everyone.